This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
9:03 on this Saturday morning. Time now for Sports Saturday, brought to you by Prairie Farms Dairy in Carlinville. Taste the homemade goodness of Prairie Farms. By Mark Steeren, your State Farm Insurance agent in Litchfield. Kurt's 24-hour heavy and light-duty towing in Litchfield. By DC Waste and Recycling in Hillsboro. Bruce Webb Insurance in Farmersville and Raymond. By Nancy's Pizza in Litchfield. The Huff & Sons Funeral Homes in Hillsboro, Raymond, and Farmersville. By CTI Tech, bringing 1-gig internet to Hillsboro and beyond. By Hillsboro Area Hospital, your front door to a world of healthcare. And by Garrell's Auto Body and Repair in Litchfield. And on this Saturday morning, we join WSMI's Tim Mize.
David Jenkins, thank you so much, and welcome to Sports Saturday. Hard to believe the last Saturday in June. My goodness, where is the summer going? Thanks for joining us this morning. We have Louie Lang in studio with us today. We're going to talk to Louie about a variety of things related to the world of officiating. We also have a conversation with Litchfield's Victoria Francis. She will be heading off to Kazakhstan later this year to compete for Team USA in the World Wrestling Championships. An outstanding honor for Victoria Francis, and we'll bring you that conversation coming up about 9:45. Here on Sports Saturday. But Louie Lang, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Tim.
Well, we always like to have you in during the summertime to talk about all sorts of things in the officiating world, and we're going to get to a lot of that, the need for officials. It's still a very real problem. But I want to start this morning talking about your experience last Saturday. The Greenville Comets played at Busch Stadium. They've done that a number of times. Joe Allstott does a great job as the athletic director over there at Greenville, and you had the privilege and the honor to be behind the plate calling balls and strikes when the Greenville Comets took on an outfit out of Carlisle, Kentucky. And you've got a shirt on, bucket list. You got it for Father's Day, you said. And the last check on the list is umpiring at Busch Stadium. That had to be quite the thrill.
It was an experience that I'll never forget. And I thank Joe Allstott down at Greenville for giving me that opportunity. And, you know, I had several other opportunities this year to officiate. I did the Class 1A, 2A state softball tournament back the end of May, 1st of June. But this was just basically icing on the cake, getting to umpire at Busch Stadium.
And when you're involved in that, that's a lot more than just umpiring a ball game. Talk about some of the logistics involved and some of the hoops you had to jump through.
Well, we was supposed to meet at the top of the ninth inning, and it's a hurry-up-and-wait game down at Busch Stadium. I had my equipment and everything on for about 2 hours before we were able to go out. They had numerous kids running the bases. It probably lasted 2 hours, them running the bases.
The kids like to run the bases. That's a pop. That might be more popular than the actual ball game when those kids get to run the bases.
That's very true. And then after that was completed, they fixed the field just like they would for a Major League Baseball game. And, you know, coming out of the right field gates, walking onto Busch Stadium, I mean, I was just in awe. I gave God the glory that I was able to be there, and it was an experience that I'll never forget.
Did you reach down and just touch to feel the grass?
Three times.
Three times.
Yes.
And, I mean, you talk about pristine conditions. When you're on a big league field like that, there's not a blade of grass that's out of place.
Oh, no, not at all. And being down in that tunnel, that hurry-up-and-wait game, we did see some major league players come out. We weren't supposed to talk to them. You know, we saw Wainwright. We saw Waka, Ozuna, Molina, and others that came out. And, you know, it was an experience.
Not supposed to talk to them?
No, they wouldn't let us talk.
What are they going to do, throw you out?
Well, I don't...
You didn't want to find out.
I was the umpire. I should be able to throw them out.
There but, you go.
But we were given strict orders not to say anything to them. But as they came out their dressing room, they did wave. And, you know, I thought that was pretty neat, too.
And you were saying that when you play at Busch Stadium, there's a 2.5-hour time limit or a 9-inning game. I thought that's interesting that it's a 9-inning game.
That is correct. And Coach Hutchison down at Greenville utilized all of his players, his freshmen all the way through seniors. I believe it was the top of the eighth inning. He came out and he said, Louie, he says, after this first batter, I'm going to pull my seniors off the field. So he put in his JV team, and then he got his freshmen in also. So, I mean, all players that had anything to do with Greenville High School baseball during this past school year were able to play on Busch Field.
And, you know, everybody wants, every senior would love to have their career end with a state championship. And that would be awesome. But I just wonder in some ways if that is a neater way for your high school career to come to a close? Because this was played, obviously, after the high school season was over. So for these seniors, their final game is at Busch Stadium. That's awesome.
Right. Something they'll never forget.
No. Talk to me a little bit about the logistics of being behind the plate at Busch Stadium. You said there was five umpires there, three from Kentucky, you and Dave Schwartz representing Illinois. But for the players, it had to be different just because the hitting background is so different, just the expansiveness of the field. But as you were doing your job, did it just seem like you were at Hillsborough or at Litchfield calling a ball game?
I was at Busch Stadium. It was a big difference because they had everything up on the screen, the replays, whatever else they had up there. Every pitch, that came in to the plate was up on the board. And, of course, they played the replay several times on a couple of plays because they were close plays, and it was fantastic.
Was it hard for you to not see the board and part of your vision when the pitch was coming in, or is it out of the way enough?
It is not out of the way. You see it.
That has to be distracting.
It definitely was because you're not used to it.
Right. Did you ever catch yourself, I think I'll just watch the screen and call it from there?
Well, I thought about it, but I thought I better not because people think I'm blind anyway. So I thought I better keep concentrating on the pitch coming in.
And I'm just glad they got to play this game because the weather that day was not good. And sometimes when the weather is spotty, they will cancel the high school game. So I would imagine when you woke up on Saturday and looked at the weather like, uh-oh.
Well, Teresa and I had doctor's appointments in St. Louis on Friday, so we spent the night, and my other family members joined us. So we had to be at the ballpark at 10:45 to take my equipment in, lined it up, single file, dogs came by, sniffed it, the whole nine yards. And then the game actually got started between the Angels and the Cardinals at 1:30, and our game actually got started at 6:07. So it was a long day at Busch Stadium, but it was well worth it. The applause and the welcome they gave Albert on Saturday, and then also his home run that we got to see.
I went on Friday, his first game back, and the ovations were nothing short of spectacular, but you got to see the home run.
I got to see the home run, and then as he crossed the plate, he got a little dirt thrown
on him.
Yes, he did. You saw that.
Yes, he did. Yeah. And then a curtain call, which you just don't see opposing players get curtain calls, but that was the whole thing there was just a special circumstance, clearly, with Albert coming back to St. Louis for the first time. And that was another caveat to the game for Greenville is, oh, by the way, you get to see Albert's return to St. Louis.
And hit a home run. Right, exactly.
Just perfect. So where were your seats at for the Cardinal game?
We were up in the 300 section, but we did have something over our head. I mean, it wasn't that hot. It did warm up as the day went on. But you're definitely correct in what you said previously, that if it was raining, the high school game would not be played. But we were praying that it did not transpire. And, of course, we did get the game in, and it was a 6-5 ball game. The final score at the top of the ninth inning with one out, game called. It's over.
Well, that's what you said earlier when we were talking before we went on the air, that they tell you it's a hard 2.5-hour time limit. When that hits,
it's over.
It's over.
Right.
There's no, we're not going to finish the inning.
Nope.
It's done. Get off the field.
I believe the time, it was over at 8:37, and at 8:35 they announced this is the last batter.
I'm not messing around.
Nope.
And, it's a really neat thing what Busch Stadium does because they have a lot of high school games there.
They definitely do.
I mean, it might be every Saturday throughout the spring and early summer that they have a high school game. I mean, it's a lot.
It's a lot, and it's they have to sell so many tickets to be able to play. But, I mean, it's a great experience for the kids and for the coaches and the umpires even.
So were you in the actual umpire room?
We were not. But the accommodations they gave us were decent enough. Just the experience of being there was fine with me.
Yeah, very cool. Talking with Louie Lang here about his experience at Busch Stadium. When we come back, we're going to talk to Louie just about officiating overall. We are still in desperate need of officials at the junior high and the high school level, and it's becoming a very serious problem. We're going to continue our conversation with Louie Lang when Sports Saturday returns.
Back to Sports Saturday here on WSMI, and we rejoin Tim Mize.
All right, David Jenkins, thank you so much. And we'll have our interview with Victoria Francis coming up in about half an hour here on WSMI. Victoria will be off to Kazakhstan coming up later this year for Team USA to compete in the World Wrestling Championships. In studio with us right now is our good buddy Louie Lang. And Louie, you do I don't know how many games you do throughout a year. Do you have a rough number between football, basketball, baseball, softball, how many games you do in a given year? Just at the varsity level. I'm not even going to count the JFL games you do and all the youth events that you do. Just from a varsity perspective, how many games are you doing on average?
Numerous.
Okay.
No idea.
It's a big number.
No idea, yes.
It's a big number. And how many years you've been doing it?
This is my 42nd.
You're 42nd or 7th?
42nd.
42nd year. You just renewed your license again, so you'll be back again next year. And officials are an easy target for everybody. Everybody sits up in the stands, thinks they can do a better job. All officials are stupid. All officials cost us that ball game. Blah, blah, blah. We've all heard it before. And then people wonder, well, why does anybody want to officiate? And this is becoming a real problem. I've heard more noise about it the last 3 or 4 years than I had really prior about when you go to a game, whatever the sport is, when you look at the officials, there's not a lot of young people out there.
Definitely not.
And with some of the abuse that officials will take verbally at games, you factor that in, you factor in the travel that's involved, the time that's involved, the pay a lot of times that's not involved. It's easy to see why people wouldn't want to go down that path of being an official. But this is a real problem, and if we don't start to get young people involved in officiating, can't have the games because there's no officials.
That's exactly right. I foresee football in the future, varsity football, possibly being played on Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturday afternoon due to the lack of officials. Qualified crews, you know, in the future is what, kind of what I see.
Missouri had that problem. I think they had to move their games to Thursday last year for that very, very reason. And I guess you do so much trying to get people involved in officiating. I know a lot of times you'll take young officials under your wing, bring them with you, and that's kind of how they will get their start into varsity officiating. Just talk a little bit about that process, and for anybody who wants to get into officiating, you're certainly one of the first people they need to contact.
I'd be more than happy to help anyone out, you know, female or male. We need officials bad. And, you know, I'm open and I'm very willing to help anybody out that I possibly can. If they wish to contact me, they can call WSMI and you can pass the information on to them. But we're definitely in need of officials.
When did you start to notice? Because probably as an official, you probably sensed it before a lot of people did.
Probably about 10 years ago. You know, I was 51 at the time, and I thought, man, how many more years can I go? As I said, this is my 42nd year. My goal is to go 50. I don't know whether my knees are going to allow me to do that or not, but that is a goal in life, and, you know, I just pray that I'm able to do it for the next few years.
And you were telling me just a moment ago, and I did not realize that you have to pay per sport to get certified with the IHSA.
That is correct. We have an annual fee that we have to pay, and then we have clinics every 3 years that we have to attend, and then we have a rules test that we have to take every year online. It is open book. Until you get to the certified level, you have, you know, it's a closed book type deal. But, you know, it involves a lot. You have to be very dedicated, and it takes time away from your loved ones. But, you know, people don't realize that, you know, I may leave home at 4:30 in the afternoon to travel and be back home at 10:30 at night. That used to be a problem working at Graham Correctional Center, but now that I'm retired, I can pretty well, you know, go and come as I please. But, you know, as the old saying is, you know, once you retire, you're busier in life than you've ever been. Amen to that.
Yeah, the honeydew list probably gets a little bit longer.
Yeah, Teresa can cut that in half for tomorrow. That'll be fine.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen, Louie.
No, it won't. No, it won't.
So let's talk about kind of, I guess, decorum, if you will, because as an official, you're out there, and despite what people might think, you have no agenda. You're not out there to make sure one team wins, the other team loses, or X player gets so many free throws, or so many penalties are called on team Y. That's not your objective. Fans, short for fanatical, the fans have the agenda.
Right.
Because they want their loved one to succeed.
Exactly.
That's their goal. They want their school to win. That's their hope. Your hope is to call a game right down the middle and not be a factor.
Exactly right. with no overtime or extra innings.
Ideally.
Yes.
And of course, that's the old officiating rule, no overtime in JV games.
Exactly right.
That cannot happen. That's a broadcaster's worst nightmare. It's an official's worst nightmare. Nobody wants overtime in a JV game.
But if it comes to it, you got to play it. You cannot, make a call that's not there just so you won't play play the varsity game quicker than what you anticipated.
Let's talk about a few specific rules situations. I know this past year in high school basketball, they changed the emphasis on the block charge. And I've always felt the block charge is the hardest call in all the sports to make. It's bang, bang. It happens so fast, and I can never tell. If you call it a block, I usually thought it was a charge. If you call it a charge, I usually thought it was a block. But that's just kind of how the mind works. It's so hard, and I guess the biggest difference is the defender does not have to be set. They can be moving. That's probably the biggest misconception.
And fans don't realize that. Whereas in the past, the defender had to be set with that new rule that he doesn't now. And, of course, you're right 50% of the time on that particular call, especially because, again, people just don't know the rules.
And it's so hard, Lou. I can only imagine as an official when you get that, full speed, bang, bang, and you have to make the call instantaneously. You can't blow your whistle and then wait a few seconds to really process it. You have to go with what you saw
now,
as it happened.
Right now. No hesitation whatsoever. And you got to sell that call. You may be wrong. Try to sell it.
Right.
No matter what.
And that's the thing, too. You have to stand by your call. And that's not to say sometimes you will have, you'll go over to coach, I missed that one.
I blew it.
Yeah. And the coaches appreciate that, don't they?
Exactly. Yes, they do.
There's a way for coaches to, quote-unquote, get calls, for lack of a better term. Yelling and screaming like a wild person is not the way to do it. But maybe when you're running by, if they just pop up and say, hey, Louie, I think he was moving on that screen. Mm-hmm. Or, hey, I think he's in the lane for 3 seconds. To where you hear it, but the rest of the crowd doesn't hear it.
Right, and you do take that into consideration. You're not going to give him the call the next time down the court for 3 seconds. You're going to concentrate on that maybe a little bit more than what you had in the first part of the contest. But it's definitely, be cordial. We're human beings. And, I got a heart just like everybody else.
What?
Yeah,
but
I really do.
No.
I really do.
You're an official.
I know that.
You don't have a heart. You're a robot. You're a robot. Programmed to screw my team, Louie. I know how it works.
Well, some people think that, but as I tell people in the community, especially coaches and players, as an official, I've never missed a free throw, and I've never thrown the ball away.
Well, that's what Terry Tote would always say is when someone would try to tell him, this official cost us the game. That was his automatic answer. How many free throws did you miss? How many turnovers did you have?
Right.
If you made every free throw, had zero turnovers, and made every shot you took, I like your chances of winning the game.
I'd like to officiate a game like that.
That'd be something, wouldn't it?
It would be great.
Make your job really easy.
It would be great, yes.
Lou, I know a couple months ago, you had a softball clinic, I think, for officials. Was it a Tier 2?
It was a Level 2.
Level 2 clinic. Talk a little bit about that, what goes into that, and what exactly that means. Like, Level 2, what are you talking about there?
Well, Level 1 is basically for beginning officials as the registered official. And then as you move up, you have to take a Level 2 clinic for the recognized and the certified officials. The clinic that I had at Litchfield High School at the time, I was athletic director, and there'd never been one in this area. So I contacted Joe Meyer in Springfield and the IHSA, telling them that I'd be interested in hosting one. And we had it on a Sunday afternoon from 1 to 5. We were able to bring in a retailer that sold equipment on the spot. It was a four-hour clinic, as I said, and we had like 25 people show up, and that was the first time in this area that that's ever transpired. Great atmosphere. We did it in the middle school at Litchfield. We were able to use the gym that connected right there to the classroom, but it is classroom and per se on field, but even though it was in the gym, mechanics that you have to go through.
Mechanics. Terry would always talk about mechanics. So important for an official to have the proper mechanics.
That makes a big difference.
And for someone maybe, mechanics, what were you talking about? Talk a little bit about what the mechanics are for an official.
Well, as again, even on the baseball or softball field, you have to sell your call. You know, if it's safe, sell it. If it's out, you know, get your arm up and let them know. A strike call, that inside corner, you know, it's a strike. It's that simple. That plate's there for a reason, and you have to utilize it. And, you know, especially a 3-2 count, you better come up swinging. Because I've never seen anybody in my career get a college scholarship on walks.
No.
Hit the ball. Hit it.
It's called hitting.
Hit the ball.
It's called hitting.
Right.
So when you do a clinic like that, are there certain, I guess, questions that are more common than others from those that are attending?
It's basically a PowerPoint type deal in the classroom. You go through all kinds of aspects of what could happen in a part of a softball game or any sport. And, I mean, it's very in-depth for you. And at that clinic that we had at Litchfield, we had three new officials that did show up for softball, which I thought was great. And it's very in-depth. You know, you got to study your rule book every year because there are different rules coming out, especially this coming year with basketball. They've got some new rules coming with softball this past year. They went to the 15-run rule after three innings. And I always like, you know, the 10-run rule after five and a one-run difference after seven. With no exchange.
Yes, exactly right. You mentioned new rules for basketball. What are they?
Well, they're anticipating the point spread again, like they had a few years ago. You recall, you're too young probably to recall, but several years ago they had a 30-point, you know, in the fourth quarter.
I'm not that young, though. Yeah, I do remember that.
30-point in the fourth quarter. And, you know, I think they need to bring that back, just like in football, if it's 40, you know, in the second half. You know, and you will remember Edwardsville a few years ago was up by 40 in a football game and got beat.
They did. And I think for football, I think it's a wonderful thing. But for me, in regular season basketball, I don't like it because the game goes too fast. When that clock is running on free throws, so much time is lost. And it's not like a football game where the clock stops on the incomplete pass. And I just think from my own perspective, I was a benchy. Mm-hmm. Those last few minutes of the fourth quarter, that was my time.
Right.
That was my time. And the running clock takes that away from the kids at the end of the bench. In basketball.
Right.
In basketball.
It does.
And for tournament play, I like it. I think it's good. Mm-hmm. Keep the tournaments on par. But I'm not a big fan of that for regular season basketball. I mean, I've seen a number of times where the game ends at the free throw line.
Right.
And they have to stop the clock with like 0.3 seconds left so the horn doesn't go off
right. While
the kid's shooting the free throw.
Right.
So that is probably going to happen, though, for
There's
basketball this coming year?
Good possibility that's coming.
Are there any, like last year we saw the block charge call change. Are there any actual game rules that are going to be different this year than last?
I haven't really looked at any other rules. You know, football, as you said, last past week, it's right around the corner, like 2 months away.
August 30th.
Except for JFL, and I got my JFL schedule this week, and that's, believe it or not, August 10th this year.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Eight-man football. That's going to start to become more prevalent. I know Pawnee and Bunker Hill both have eight-man teams. I don't know much about eight-man football. From an officiating standpoint, are the crews the same size?
I do not have any idea what transpires there.
So you're not signing up for eight-man football?
I'm not.
You're busy with the 11-on-11.
That's exactly right. Yeah. I think it's more interesting.
Yeah. And I think, though, Lou, that will be an interesting turn here for our small area of the world is as numbers become – more of an issue is eight-man football the way that it starts to go.
Exactly. Look at your school districts. Exactly. And, you know, I heard Bunker Hill schedule that you announced a day or so ago. They got some traveling to do.
Oh, they got a lot. And they're playing the same team three times. No, they got into it late. They right. decided late in the game that that's the route they were going to go. But, yeah, I think it's Washburn, Low Point. They play them three times, three out of their nine games
right.
against one. But, yeah, there's a lot of travel up to the northern part of the state involved.
And with that districting that's coming up in a couple of years, there's going to be a lot of traveling in that, not only for teams, but for officials also.
You travel anyway, though, for football. You booked out to like 2165, and you're...
You're correct, yes, it is. That's right. But with the district, that's going to kind of mess me up because I don't know where, you know, who's going to have a home game or whatever.
Well, you know, there's always unintended consequences with things. I'm personally a fan of the district. I like the way that it's going to go. I like the fact that you're going to know what class you are mm-hmm. at the start of the year, and you can, you know, schedule from that point of things. But an unintended consequence will be that officials, because a lot of these ADs, I know that was one of the big concerns for the ADs I talked to when this came down the line was, they said, I've got officials out through, you know, say 2024, whatever the case would be. That's just a random number. But that's all going to change.
Right. Well, when I took over as athletic director at Litchfield, that's one of the first things I looked at was football, and Patrick Rentsch did have officials hired out through 2024. Me as a crew chief, I have officials. My crew actually has games through 2024 also. But that could very change. I may not be going to Hillsborough or Litchfield, you know, in the future. I may be going to Mount Carmel or, you know, wherever it might be.
We're talking with Louie Lang here, the great IHSA official. We're going to take a break. We'll come back with more on Sports Saturday following these messages.
Back to Sports Saturday here on WSMI, and we rejoin Tim Mize.
All right, David Jenkins, thank you so much. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll have our conversation with Victoria Francis. Victoria heading to Kazakhstan to represent Team USA in the World Wrestling Championship. She graduated from Litchfield back in 2012. And, of course, Kelsey Card, she's going to the Pan Am Games. That'll be coming up later this summer as well. Of course, Kelsey was a 2016 Olympian. Now she's off to the Pan Am Games to represent Team USA once again. So congratulations to both those young ladies as they will represent America in World Championship play. Talking with Louie Lang here on Sports Saturday. And, Louie, you had quite the year. You got, what, two playoff football games.
Correct.
You're at the state softball tournament. And when you get those types of postseason assignments, that is based on your performance. Because some people might not realize this. You guys get graded.
We get evaluated after every game.
After every game. And it never ceases to amaze me. The people who are the loudest at the games usually don't know very much.
Correct.
The rules they're clamoring about are not correct as they're stating them. And I don't know how many times I have heard people scream to the effect, you need to be evaluated. You need to get graded. You need to get checked. And I think to myself, but they do.
We do. Every game.
But they do. And if those evaluations are subpar, you're not getting postseason assignments.
And if the coaches, I mean, it's a requirement that the coaches do it. If not, they'll be put on probation. And the school could possibly not be eligible for playoffs if the coaches don't do it. So it is definitely mandatory that they do the evaluations after each game. They may not do it after each game. They may wait until the end of the season to do everything. But a lot of coaches do it right at the end of the game because it's fresh in their mind.
Fresh in their mind. Yeah, so you guys are getting graded. You're getting judged on your performance. So with that in mind, when you get deep postseason runs like you have the last number of years, that means you're doing a dang good job at the officiating business. And I guess when you get to the second round of the playoffs, that's a big deal. Player, official, if you're in the second round of the playoffs, that is huge.
Well, we had Decatur St. Teresa at Athens in our second round this year. What a ball game. Great ball game.
Yeah. Those two high-level teams right there. So we know that softball, I think, is kind of your passion.
It is.
You love the softball. And I know a few years ago when you were at the state tournament, you were on the field for the Calhoun Epic Game where Grace, they played like, what, how many innings they played?
17 innings.
Grace Ballman struck out, I don't know, 1,000 batters or something.
Total of 69 between
the
two pitches.
Oh, my gosh.
3 hours and 54 minutes.
Woo! And then there was another Epic Game this year. You weren't on the field for that one. But when you're involved in a game like that, how hard is it to stay in the moment and not get caught up in what's going on?
Well, in that 17-inning game that I had, you know, a few years ago, I mean, it was so exciting. You didn't know what was going to happen. I believe I had four calls at first base, and I can say I got all four of them right. People may not agree with me, but I had a great game because I didn't have many calls because there were so many strikeouts.
And that, you know, when you're on the bases, it's hard to keep your focus. When you're behind the plate, you're locked in because every pitch is coming, boom, boom, boom. You're involved in the whole game. But when you're on the bases, your mind can wander if you lose a little bit of mental focus.
But on that particular game, it was Trico against Hardin Calhoun, but you had to concentrate the whole game because if you had a bang-bang play at first base, I mean, that could be a big deal. This state tournament.
Yeah.
You got to be in your A game at that time.
I remember as a kid, I was umping. I was on the bases, and this kid drilled the ball into right center field, goes around first. I'm still standing behind first. He's around at second. I think, man, that's going to be a close play at third. Oh, crap, I got to make that call at third. So I'm sprinting across the diamond to make the play. Because there's just like for the players, there's always a place to be. There's always a place to be for an official. Proper positioning is key.
And that's what the clinics basically are for, your mechanics, for your positioning. You know, on a three-man crew, you know, someone always has to go out on a fly ball. You know, it's very important to attend a clinic. And one thing I'll throw in, too, is that the IHSA has allowed first-time officials, they will waive their fee for the first year. So after that, it costs you to umpire or officiate, but the first year, the fees are waived by the IHSA. But they have to go through an association to be able to get that free ride on the first year.
Okay. So if anybody's interested in becoming an official, contact Lou. You can call out to the radio station. We'll give you the number to get in contact with him. But if you've been thinking about becoming an official, I encourage you to do it because we're in desperate need of officials.
And in your spare time, if you'd like to get back into it, I'd be more than happy to welcome you back to the officiating world.
I don't have the time for that. I'd love to do it. But I cannot squeeze that into my schedule at this point in time. And Louis, I wanted to talk to you about this because this was a national story. It was a viral moment a few weeks ago. There was a disgusting display by parents. I think it's out in Colorado. A 7-year-old baseball game. A melee breaks out over the call of a 13-year-old umpire. And then we wonder while we're sitting here today having conversations about young people not wanting to be officials.
And, you know, the bad thing is the parents are supposed to be examples for the kids.
In theory.
Exactly. I mean, whenever I was a kid, you'd never seen that. But now, I mean, it takes, and then they put it on national news, and, you know, what does that do?
I mean, yeah, it definitely brings awareness to it, but it does kind of, I'm not going to say glorifies it, but, I mean, it gets you infamous.
It does, definitely.
Now, some of those, there's assault charges out there, you know, so, I mean, people get arrested for that now, as they should. But that's just ridiculous. And I coach a youth baseball team right now with my nephew. And it blows my mind the things that adults scream at kid umpires. I can't fathom why you would, like, we all want to win. Everybody wants to win. They're kids.
Right.
Getting paid like 15 bucks a game. They're doing the best they can.
Right.
As Terry always said, the safety of the free world is not at stake here, folks. Like, yeah, we want to win, but at what cost? Like, I tell these umpires before every game, I'll never be one of these coaches who yells at you. Because I remember what it's like to be the kid umpire getting yelled at by adults. And I remember thinking, what's wrong with these people? Like, I'm a kid.
Right.
Calm down. And, of course, all I ever wanted to do as a kid umpire was throw somebody out. Never got to do it, though.
Uh-huh.
Never got to do it.
Well, that's not one of my goals, to do that. But sometimes,
when I was a 13-year-old kid, it was.
But sometimes you have to take care of business. You know, it's that simple. And the problem is, I think it should be required that each school possibly has some type of a rules interpretation prior to the season. Let the fans come and know what the rules is. Have some of us officials come in. If you don't know a block charge or if you don't know the over and back, that's another big one that
people don't
understand. There's several rules that, I mean, I'd be more than happy to come and speak to parents and just tell them, some of you guys don't know the rules,
right.
And here they are. Here's my rule book. Read it. Take it home and read it.
I really do believe that if you want to be a youth coach, I don't care what the sport is, you should be required to officiate for a season first.
They'll get a different perspective.
Real fast.
Yes.
Real fast. Louis Lang, thank you so much for coming in this morning. Always enjoy our conversations, and Football Friday's just about 2 months out. Where are you going week one?
We are headed to Mount Carmel.
No.
Week one.
Might as well just rent like an RV and just be on the way.
Well, we may be going there more, you know, in the future with the district union. And before we do close, I just want to compliment you and the rest of the staff here at WSMI for filling in for Terry, a very great and personal friend of mine, as he was a lot of people. I just want to let you know, Tim, that you're doing a fantastic job, and Terry would be very proud of you as he's looking down from heaven on your job. And you guys have been in our thoughts and prayers, and you guys will continue to be, but just keep up the good work.
I appreciate that, Louis. Thank you very much. That is Louis Lang here on Sports Saturday. When we come back, we will have our conversation with Litchfield's Victoria Francis when Sports Saturday rolls on. We are talking now with Victoria Francis. She is a 2012 Litchfield graduate, and she will be off to Kazakhstan coming up in September to compete in the World Championships for Women's Freestyle Wrestling. Victoria, thank you so much for coming in today, and you just have to be so excited about this opportunity.
Absolutely, and thanks for having me in today.
You qualified a few weeks ago, and just talk about, I guess, the initial reaction to when you realized,
holy crap, I'm going to be representing America in a world championship.
It was definitely very exciting in the moment, but I feel like a lot of elite athletes will tell you, you know, leading into competition, they truly believe that they're going to be the one. So there's always that kind of basis of belief, but when it actually happens, it was just mind-blowing. It's a very tough year, and it's very exciting to get back on that world team.
Take us through the qualifying process, kind of from how you started it to the moment where you made the team.
Yeah, so this year I had because I was off competition for a year, I had to qualify for world team trials through the U.S. Open. It was my first competition in 13 months, so it was a little nerve-wracking, but still confident. I qualified there by taking second. World team trials was 3 weeks after that in North Carolina. I ended up winning that pretty easily, which was just another confidence booster. After winning that, that put me in what we now call Final X, where it's a best 2 out of 3 wrestle-off with another person who happened to be the person who beat me at the U.S. Open. At Final X, I was able to beat her in the first 2 matches, first by just points, and then the second time I beat her with a pin. And just very exciting and big confidence boost after having a year off of competition.
And the reason for the year off?
I actually had a USADA sanction, so I failed a drug test, and it turned out to be a supplement that was contaminated, which contaminated me with USADA. Even though it wasn't my fault, They still say, you took the risk by taking a supplement. You still need to be punished a little bit. So I was banned from competition for a year.
And, you know, that's the crazy thing about these supplements is you just don't know what's in these things.
Absolutely. They're not regulated by the FDA. They're not a drug. They're not food. They're a totally different thing. So USADA is always kind of out there, you know, don't take a supplement. Or if you are, you know, try to be very cautious with it. There is third-party testing by, like, NSF and Trusted by Sport, which gives you a little more confidence. But if you're buying something from Walmart or GNC, you don't know. You do not know.
Yeah. And so with the year off, I'm sure mentally you did a lot of preparation and kind of thinking, and so much of high-level athletics is mental preparation.
Absolutely. There was even a time during my year off where I actually tore my MCL a little bit. So I was off the mat. I couldn't even do anything at all. So it was a lot of, all right, well, I'm going to watch video. I'm going to work on my mental game. So it did give me a chance to step back from all the physical tasks that usually comes with competing and give me a chance to work on my mental and my confidence. Yeah, it's good.
And when you were at Litchfield, you mentioned you graduated in 2012. There's no women's wrestling at Litchfield, so you wrestled with the boys, and that had to just be a big benefit for you moving forward.
Absolutely. I mean, in the time, it was just like, all right, I'm wrestling boys. This is what I have to do. But anytime I'm looking back at those years at Litchfield, I do remember, like, all right, if I could wrestle boys as a girl, I can handle this. Like, it does give me a good confidence boost and that foundation of just toughness and resiliency.
What was the reaction you got when you were in high school from the boys that you were wrestling?
I think there was a little definitely hesitation and just not wanting me to be there from some guys. I definitely got that vibe from a lot of people. Even some coaches from other teams, like, we'd be trying to set up exhibition JV matches, and they're like, I don't want my guy to lose to a girl.
Right.
Hurt his confidence. Like, well, if he doesn't have that foundation for confidence already, I think that's something, it's not my fault. That's, you guys need to figure that out. So there was definitely a lot of hesitation towards that. But thankfully, I'm seeing nowadays girls in high school are getting more appreciation and respect from their team members, from their coaches, from coaches of other teams. I feel like Illinois is in line to have a high school sanctioning hopefully in the next couple of years.
And, you know, 2012 wasn't that long ago, but in respect to that, a lot has changed in the last 7 years.
Absolutely. Just a number that I can throw out. When I was going, looking at colleges, there was approximately 20 colleges in the U.S. that had a women's wrestling team. Now we're over 50.
Oh, wow.
And that I graduated 3 years ago. So it's booming. Girls wrestling on the high school level is the fastest growing sport that does not have an NCAA division for it. So it's booming, and I'm so proud. I'm glad that that's happening for girls today.
And where did you go to college?
I went to college at Lindenwood University in St. Charles, Missouri.
And, of course, that's a very fine institution across the board. And you were telling me before we started that even now you're out in Maryland, your husband's stationed out there, but you still can't practice against women.
Yeah, so I moved to Maryland just over a year ago, and there are some girl, like high school girls out there, and actually our only Olympic gold medalist for women's wrestling from the U.S. is from Maryland, but she doesn't live there, she doesn't train there. So I end up scrapping with the college guys now between University of Maryland and Naval Academy and a couple high school clubs that have welcomed me in. So I'm back to my roots of wrestling against guys, but once again, it's just building up my resiliency, building up my toughness.
And, I mean, is it safe to say that if it wasn't for the experience of wrestling against guys, you probably wouldn't be going to Kazakhstan in September?
I would have to say, yeah. I mean, if I didn't wrestle against guys in high school, middle school, I wouldn't have built that base, and I probably wouldn't have that experience. It would just been totally different. I'd be a different person today, so... yeah, I have to thank that.
So you'll be doing freestyle wrestling coming up at the 2019 World Championships. And for people who might not be familiar, just kind of talk about freestyle wrestling and what it is.
So freestyle wrestling is one of the international disciplines for wrestling. It's very similar to what you would see in high school wrestling. High school wrestling is called folk style. The only difference, or one of the biggest differences, is in folk style, they wrestle through the top-bottom position and have to work their way up and score points there. In freestyle, after about 10 to 20 seconds, if there's not scoring happening, they bring you back to your feet to the neutral position. So it's similar to what you would see here in the States, but a little different.
And when you start your training for the World Championships, where will you be, and kind of what will be the process? How many coaches are involved? How many teammates will you have?
Yeah, so this summer I'm kind of all over, thankfully. I'll be, I'm going to Canada next week, I'll have some training with some Team USA, also with Team Canada. I suppose China's going to be there also. I'll also be going to Japan for a training camp. And then after that, we'll be going to Colorado as a team to train for a couple weeks. And then after that, we'll be going to Italy for our acclimation camp right before Worlds. But all that will be varying about, how many coaches we have. There's, I want to say, five like team coaches that will be at Worlds. And Terry Steiner is our head coach. We also have Jessica Medina and Clarissa Chun, who are previous Team USA members. They are now Team USA coaches. And then we'll also have, I believe, Troy Steiner and Israel Silva with us. But at these different training parts, we'll have different amount of coaches, different amount of team members, just whoever is available. But thankfully, we usually always have, a couple girls lined up, so the world team members have different partners to work with. So,
what weight class will you be wrestling at?
I'll be wrestling at 72 kilos, which is about 158 pounds.
Is that the normal range for you?
I'm a little heavier than that naturally, but with weight cutting, I can make my way down there pretty healthily.
And I guess that's the key when you have to cut weight, is to do it in a healthy manner.
Absolutely. A lot of kids learn through high school and college, what's healthy and what's, not. And I'm at that point, on an elite level where you have dietitians and coaches and other teammates who have a lot of experience. So we all kind of pull together and can make the healthiest process of cutting weight.
And I'm sure, as you've been on this journey, your family has to be so proud of you.
Absolutely. Thankfully, I'm home for a week right now, so I can hang out with family and get to see them for a bit. But as soon as I got home, everybody's like, so proud of you, so excited. And I'm like, me too. But, yeah, they're absolutely stoked.
How did you get, on the path to this? Because a lot of people participate in high school athletics. Then the number gets smaller for college. And then post-college, that number shrinks even more. So how did it come about that after you were done at Lindenwood where, holy cow, I'm going to this level?
Yeah, thankfully Lindenwood was a good link for me between high school wrestling and the international. During Lindenwood's time, I got to, in the postseason, wrestle a couple senior level tournaments, and I made my way on the junior world team my sophomore year. So that was my first exposure to international wrestling and going overseas. So I had some international and senior level wrestling under my belt through Lindenwood and through the funding and schedule that Lindenwood provided for me. And that helped get me to the senior level today.
and you'll be in Kazakhstan in September. And, I mean, that is literally, I don't know if it's more than halfway around the world, but it's a long way away.
It's just about.
So have you looked into, like, the culture over there? Because that's, I mean,
yeah.
That's totally different.
It is. I haven't yet. I have a bad habit of just kind of hopping on the plane, and wherever I land and whatever's happening is what's going on. But our coach just sent out an email the other day, and he's got to visit Kazakhstan himself a few months ago and said that the infrastructure is there, and it's a little more modern than he had expected. But haven't really looked into it yet, but it's on my to-do list.
And I guess that's a fine line, too, because you want to take it all in, but you're there to compete.
Absolutely. Everybody always asks, like, oh, are you going to have time to explore? And it's like, yeah, there's time to explore, but we're there for business, and that comes first. But hopefully we'll have time to check it out and get to absorb and appreciate the culture there.
I can't imagine that when you were in high school at Litchfield wrestling boys that you thought, you know what, in less than 10 years, I'm going to be competing for Team USA in the World Championships.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't like a clear image in my head, but it was kind of the goal. That was part of the reason why I joined Linwood's team. I wanted to continue wrestling and make myself on the Olympic team, but I had no idea what it included, and I feel like it was just such a distant dream that I couldn't have said 10 years ago, like, yeah, I'm going to be on Team USA, but here I am, I'll take it.
Are you? Because I know wrestling, a lot of times, it's a family affair, it's a generational thing. Has that been the case for your family?
Not exactly. I did have family members who wrestled. My brother wrestled in elementary, middle school, and did a year of high school. I had a couple cousins who wrestled, but it definitely isn't a generational thing. My dad didn't have much knowledge. He would sit in my corner at open tournaments, but he was kind of just there for, you know, to be a coach in the corner. But I think that worked out well for me. I see a lot of athletes who it is a generational thing, and sometimes the parents and the pressure of all of it, it's too much because it's just so ingrained in their family. So I guess it worked out for me.
And when you get to this type of level, whether you want to or not, or whether you appreciate it at the time, you are now a role model for young girls who maybe think, hey, I can do what Victoria is doing. That looks pretty awesome. So if you had, like, a message maybe for some young girls around the WSMI listening area who thought, I never thought about that. What would you tell them in terms of kind of pursuing their dreams and goals?
Pursuing dreams and goals in general, I would just say, you know, there's always going to be obstacles, whether it's, you know, not the norm for a female to do whatever you're looking to do. But you got to have to push through it. You know, if that's what you want to do and you think it's worth doing, then go for it. Do it. It's going to be hard and expect that, but just realize you're tougher than your obstacles.
Victoria Francis, thank you so much for coming in and talking with us today, and good luck in Kazakhstan.
Thank you for having me in.
That was Victoria Francis, a 2012 Litchfield graduate, going to Kazakhstan to wrestle in the World Championships. And David Jenkins, that is very cool and awesome accomplishment. We have Victoria on Team USA for the World Wrestling Championships, and of course Kelsey Card back on Team USA for the Pan American Games coming up this summer, and she'll be throwing the discus, of course, there, just as she did in the 2016 Olympics. So a couple of young local ladies who are representing our country on a global stage.
Well, and who knows, Ryan Held might be back representing again. I mean, he's young enough. He's of course, from Springfield, or Chatham, I think, technically, but was at the Olympics last time, has family in the immediate area, the Held family in Raymond, so could have a very, very local flair in the Olympics.
Could be very busy.
Could be
very busy. And, of course, Reed Detmers just wrapped up his, sophomore season.
Yes.
At Louisville.
Not bad either.
No.
Ended up being
All-American
pitcher. Yeah.
Not bad.
I think he might have gotten off to a rough start, but ended up being the best pitcher Louisville had this year.
Yeah, he's on his way to the big leagues.
Yeah. Could be next year.
Very neat. So many great young people from our listening area doing awesome things in the world of athletics, but we want to thank Victoria Francis for coming out. I was setting up that interview, and she's like, well, I'm going to be back in Litchfield. If you want to do it in person, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, I do. Let's do that.
Yes, please.
That's better than the phone. Thank you very much. But an impressive young lady, no doubt, Victoria Francis, off to Kazakhstan.
Don't know much about it.
Long way away, David.
Yes.
Long way away.
It's across the ocean.
Yeah, I've heard that, yes. Hey, Cardinal Baseball tonight, 8:15 a.m., 1540 FM, 106.9. Next Saturday, we will rebroadcast Terry Toad's call of the 2009 Lincolnwood State Baseball Championship. That will be Sports Saturday for next week here on FM 106. Thanks to Louis Lang for coming out. Thanks to Victoria Francis as well. For David Jenkins, I'm Tim Mai. Sports Saturday is done on your 50,000-watt sports voice of Mid-Illinois, WQSMI, FM, Litchfield, Hillsboro, Carthenville, and Greenville.